I'd come from like this little town in Georgia, and like I was making seven figures, which from a dude from Georgia, that's $1 billion.
Yes.
You know, I was like, holy crap. I literally could not figure out what to do with the money.
Right.
It was like, I'll get a Ferrari and a Rolls, and I don't know, let me lease this giant house and get as many guitars as I can.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier.
This is your seat at the table. Today, let's sit down with Roland as he talks with Frank Kern. Frank is one of the world's most renowned and sought-after direct response internet marketing consultants. In this episode, how Frank connected with influencers and created win-win situations, how he identified profitable markets and generated demand for his products. And Frank also gives you the four questions you need to ask yourself to determine your personal path to success.
All right, this is Roland Frazier with the Business Lunch Podcast, and today we are podcasting with Frank Kern, the inimitable Frank Kern, from my home, and this is the unofficial Jacques Solos Champagne Podcast. It is primarily Jacques Solos Champagne inspired as we sit here with way too many pillows on the sofa in our living room. Frank, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I would like to state that the amount of pillows that are on a man's couch is directly proportional to the manliness of said man.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, so this is just kind of a conversational thing where we talk about stuff. And the thing that I really like to dive into, and I've learned a whole lot about Perry and Ryan and other folks that I've interviewed that I didn't even know background-wise just by talking about where you came from and how you're thinking got you from, you know, where you were to where you are now. And so tell me just a little bit about, I saw in one of your monthly things that you had a picture of your grandfather, was it?
Yeah. When I finally started getting into business, I was thrown out of college and I had watched the movie The Godfather. And for some reason, The Godfather reminded me of my grandfather. Not that he was in any way a criminal at all.
Right.
He was awesome. But just the way he carried himself.
Kind of that authoritative figure that people came to. And
yeah. So I was like, I'm going to get to know him better, and I'm going to ask him to teach me the ways of business. Because he was a self-made multimillionaire from Crawford County, Georgia. So he jumped out of the school window in eighth grade.
Okay.
Like literally, I mean, he could have taken the door, I guess, but it just looked cooler to jump out of the window. He was like,
yeah,
I'm not going to take the door. Going out the window.
Yeah.
Because it was closer to where he was. He was efficient. So he jumps out of the window, and then he goes on to become a self-made multimillionaire. So I'm like, will you teach me how to get rich?
Okay.
And he's like, yes.
And did he have like a car lot or something?
He did. And okay. So he put me into business. I had a car lot. It was two doors down from Piedmont Housing, right across the street from the Big Blue Water Tower.
Does that turn into anything? Or
no, it was horrible. Yeah, right. I did badly. I went, you know, I tried to have a dog fencing business for you. I was the dude who dug the little trench to put the wire
collar
in.
Thing.
Yeah, and yeah, that was bad. I ran that in the ground. So I ran out of options and became a door-to-door credit card machine salesman, and that was the final, you know, business that I had.
Okay.
I was terrible at it. I was thrown out of a strip club on one cold call mission. I go in there and I'm talking to the dude, and what was the place called? The Neon Cowboy.
The Neon Cowboy. Of course it was.
Neon Cowboy. Yeah. And wherever, Cochrane, Georgia or something. So I go down there and I'm talking to the dude, and he's like this big, scary looking freaking guy. And so it's
owner,
like,
bouncer,
owner,
manager, owner.
Okay. And his wife is there. And on the wall is a complete, like, full frontal nudity, anatomically correct photograph of his wife.
Ah, who is
so right there. So I'm trying to talk to them like this, you know. Ended up selling them the credit card machine.
Oh, you did?
So, yeah.
But you got thrown out.
Because I returned to install it at an inopportune moment.
I see.
Yes, they were in the middle of doing it. It was him and some other giant dudes, and I don't know what they were doing, and nor will I comment about it, other than I left post-haste. Yeah, so like, it was October of 1999.
Yeah.
I Google how to sell credit card machines on the internet.
Oh, so you were not doing that great with the door-to-door, decided it was too much work.
I never did well with anything
ever. So you're
ever.
Like, how do I do it online?
Yeah, because I didn't want to talk to people.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, I'm going to start this business and just going to be, I was just trying to get away from having to have people tell me to go screw myself.
Okay, fair enough. So you're Googling, how can I sell credit card machines
over the internet.
Over the internet.
Yeah, and saw a banner ad for Corey Rudel's course.
That's awesome. Like, I didn't know that.
Like, however, you know, I can't remember the headline. But Corey Rudel is a guy who was one of the first people to sell how to make money on the internet stuff. And it was very, very good. And I bought it, $275. Didn't have the money. Split it with my partner in the credit card machine business.
Nice.
He kept the cassettes. I kept the manuals.
Huh.
And read the manuals and was like, damn, you know, this might work. And so I followed 1/100th of the directions.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the manuals, he was like, it says something on, let's say, page 92. Hypothetically speaking, it is theoretically possible that if you send 1,000,000 emails, someone might buy something from you.
Right.
Which I interpreted, I think that this was his hidden meaning. I interpreted that as being you should send everybody
1,000,000 emails.
Yeah, yeah, send 1,000,000 emails every 10 seconds and you'll get rich immediately.
Right. Yes.
I did not get rich immediately.
You did not?
No.
This is shocking.
Yeah, so that didn't work out. But that was how the whole thing came around. That's how I got on the interwebs. And
okay. So now what did you do?
So I became a spammer. This is before it was illegal. You know, so I mean, for the record, it was not illegal. It was 1999, so it didn't become illegal until 2003,
right?
When canned spam came into place, and I was way over it by then. It was so hard, dude.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, to be a spammer back then, I don't know what it's like now. Are there spammers now?
I'm sure there are. There's some very nice royal people in Nigeria that send me lots of email from.
But hey, I won the lottery.
You did win. I mean,
I won it.
It turns out I've been selected by some of those people to manage their money.
We're going to need to check the timestamps of the emails because I won the lottery before you were selected.
You think you won?
Yeah, so don't be messing up my...
We'll open up the computers later and we'll... What happened next?
I took everything I'd learned about selling and applied it to the dog business.
Okay.
Because one of my businesses that I'd started and run into the ground immediately was selling the underground fencing stuff for, you know, dog containment or whatever. So as the guy that did that, I trained something like 300 dogs for basic obedience, mainly don't leave the yard. So I created this recordings of dog training products, like audio recordings of me telling people how to train their dogs. And took everything I learned from the direct mail tapes and all of that and used it to sell the audio recordings because it's such a big market.
Right.
You know, so when you study all that old stuff, they say, you know, the way to get money is to find the right market first. Thing number one, forget the product, find the market, and then make a product for them. And the characteristics of a market are great in number, irrationally passionate, and easy to reach. Mm-hmm. And pet owners are irrationally passionate.
Yes.
So I created that thing, wrote the sales letter for it, and it sold like crazy.
Okay.
You know, and so I did nothing but that for a couple of years. And that was pretty awesome because mm-hmm. it didn't make a tremendous amount of money. I think our biggest month was $100,000 or something.
Every $100,000 helps. I've always said that. Yeah.
But I was doing nothing. You know, I mean, it took a while to get there. It's not like, okay, the next day I was rich.
And you're running all this stuff yourself at this point, right?
Yeah. I had a guest house behind my house. This is in Macon, Georgia. So it was a tool shed mm-hmm. that had an AC window unit. That's a house.
Nice.
So that's where I ran that from.
Okay.
You know, cool. And then made enough money to come out here to the Californias. And at the same time, like surreptitiously, I'm reading People magazine because I'm an intellectual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, real uppity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, pretty much
New Yorker, listening to Harvard Business Review, People.
Yeah, People. Yeah. 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 You know, and so I'm reading that, and there's a book review about a book called The Game by Neil Strauss.
Okay.
Which is
the dating guy, right?
Pickup artist.
Pickup artist, yeah.
Yeah. Really, I mean, to clarify for Neil's sake, because he's such a gentleman and a good man. He wrote a book documenting his experience in the pickup artist world. But that world, from the public perception, and in some cases deservedly so, is like a manipulative, let's trick women type of world. That was never Neil's message. Neil's message was, look, we're all like insecure and afraid, and we do stupid crap.
Yeah.
So I could have cared less about that stuff. I was I've never been good at that. Mm-hmm. But my buddy, Dean Jackson, knew a guy who sold stuff to dudes who wanted to meet women. Maybe this book will talk about this guy that my friend knows, and then I'll have a book that mentions a dude who's a friend of a dude that I know, and therefore, I'm pretty much famous. So I get the book and I read it.
Uh-huh.
And the book is freaking amazing.
Okay.
You know, and so I'm like, holy crap, this book is really something. Where was this when I was in high school? I could have used this stuff to be rejected by many more women.
Yes.
Than I was rejected by. So I go to my cousin Trey and I'm like, listen, you got to read this. This is insane. So I give him the book. He reads it. He's like, this is ridiculous. We should find this guy and get him to do an ebook. So I'm like, yeah, but instead of doing an ebook, let's get him to do like an expensive course or something because he's uppity. We're like, all right, let's try it. The challenge was neither of us knew Neil.
Okay.
You know? So I'm messing around. I put something out. Like, I can't remember how I broadcasted the message out. This is before Facebook, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It's 2006 or 5 or something. But for some freakish reason, this dude, whose real name is Matt Kadish, who's cool, but his like nickname is Thundercat, which is super cool.
That's all right. Awesome.
He had this forum called Thundercat's Seduction Layer. And so he like somehow knew who I was, knew that I was trying to get in touch with Neil, reaches out to me and is like, I know Neil.
So to me, that like the big takeaway there is that I think so many people don't take action because they think it's impossible or it's not going to happen because they don't have a direct connect to somebody. But you can be so connected without even realizing it if you just put it out there. You could have read a book on how to get in touch with people that you don't know to network your way up, or you could have just freaking asked, which you did.
Yeah. Okay, any of y'all know this Neil fella?
So you've put it out there and now Kadish connects you.
So Trey and I are in Georgia and Thundercat has arranged this conference call between me and Trey. So we're like in this little loft apartment on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard across from Loaves and Fishes, homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. So now's the time for the conference call. All right. So we're like I'm on my Nokia flip phone. He's on his Nokia flip phone. We're this close to each other. Conference calling in with Neil.
Right.
Nervous.
Right.
Right. Because Neil's like a real guy.
Big time, right?
Yeah. He's a best-selling author. He's written for Rolling Stone. He lives in Los Angeles.
Oh, well.
Dude, might as well be the moon.
Might as well.
So then we're like, hey, Neil. And there's this echo going on. And we're like, I got an echo. You got an echo? Because we're this close to each other. And so finally, Trey's like, I think it's because we're this close to each other. So he goes away, like in another room or the parking lot or something. And Neil's just got to be thinking these people are idiots.
Yeah.
But they're going to at least attempt to make a bunch of money for me and I don't have to do anything.
So what was the intro that got that connect for you? Like, what did you say to Thundercat that Thundercat said to Neil?
It was something along the lines of, I think that if we can help him create a premium priced dating advice product for dudes, we could sell a bunch.
Okay.
Will you introduce us to him?
Okay.
And if you do, we'll give you some money if it works. Sweet. Type of thing.
Simple as it can be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was like, all right. And then so we talked to Neil, and Neil in a probably a rare moment of horrible judgment goes, oh, well, all right, you guys clearly seem to be idiots. So what could go wrong? You know? And right. So he agrees. And he does everything we tell him to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so we're like, all right, dude.
Now, did you have a deal with, like, did you say, this is what we're going to do? Or did you say, let's just do it and see what happens and then we'll figure it out?
We said, we want you to hold an expensive seminar at your house where you teach a handful of people, film it. We'll sell the recordings. We'll sell the thing at your house. All you got to do is just let us write the copy and do the marketing and stuff. And you like teach these dudes and we'll handle it.
And you had never...
No idea what we were doing.
Love that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely no idea. And Neil is a real guy. Like, he doesn't screw around. He's not like...
He's an actual business person.
Yeah, you had mentioned like, you know, Ryan and Perry. You know, there's a good bit of leeway with most of us people. Not a lot of leeway with the dude that's like 5-time New York Times bestseller, published in Rolling Stone.
Right, you know? Right.
But he's like, yeah, okay, sure. And so Trey and I are like, wait, really?
Really?
So then he like, so we're like, all right.
Have you had like a lot of those moments in your life though, where it's like, really? Like you just take the lead?
It's always like
that. It is every single time.
I can never believe any of this.
I cannot believe it either.
Yeah. People, like I'll like go on stage and there's all these people and I'm like, y'all know it's me, right? Like it's not, there's not a guy next.
Right.
I'm not the dude that's about to open the door and then the real guy's coming out.
Right,
you know? But they apparently haven't caught on to that yet. So we get there, and then we got the thing with Neil, and you know, I'll never forget it. Like, Trey gets on the phone, and this like closing dudes on the phone, mm-hmm. car lot style, because we both worked on car lots.
So, okay, so now he's agreed to do this.
And you guys foolishly agreed. So to do
you create that. Marketing stuff.
Yeah,
we and do then marketing. How are you getting that out there at the time?
We had so Thundercat had a list of dudes. Right, I'm never calling him Matt. His name is forever Thundercat.
I can imagine yeah. that you wouldn't.
So I think like he let us email his list, or he emailed his list on our behalf. Like, hey, Neil's going to do a seminar at his house for a few guys. Apply here or something. Trey gets on the phone with them and closes them car lot style.
Nice.
On coming to Neil's house.
He's throwing their keys on the roof.
Yeah, totally throwing the keys on the roof. You know, no, nothing like that. So he does all that work. I do nothing,
yep.
which is great. But that's I'm terrible at that. And so next thing you know, we got seven guys or five guys or something that have paid like $7,000 or $5,000. Both of those numbers are right. I can't remember what the order
right,
is.
Right.
Regardless. And they like go, and Neil teaches them all this cool stuff at his house. And some dudes film it. And so we take the footage and have it edited and turn it into a product.
Right.
And I'll never forget it. So like day number one, we're like, all right, we're ready to start trying to sell this thing. I'm going to start writing like the things coming emails. And he's yeah. like, okay, great. So I write this email, which in retrospect was horrible, in Neil's voice uh-huh. to go out to everybody that Neil knows. And I'm using terms like, here's how to meet a perfect 10 and things like that. Just really over the top stuff. And like I sent it to Neil, like, I'm going to send this out. And he emails back, like, love it or something. So I'm like, all right, I guess it's okay to send it. And I send it. And my man hits the roof, dude.
Oh, he did?
Yes. He's like, I would never say that. It's like, you have stabbed me in the
heart.
But
he saw it.
But I don't think he really saw it. Okay. You know, I think it's like he got it on his phone. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's talk about it later. But I'm excited. I'm okay. like, let's send okay. it.
All right.
So it didn't get started on a very good foot at all. but even then, still, he's like, even though you guys are clearly idiots, uh-huh. might as well just let you write in my voice and sell some stuff. So we do it, and you know, we build up like all of this demand for the thing. And long story short, we sold it was 375 copies. We registered the domain name only 375. We sold them all out. I think it was $3,500 or $3,700. We sold them all out in 4 hours, and it was this like none of us could believe it. I can't believe this.
$3,500 per
thing,
and you sold 375.
Yeah. And there was some logic behind that, which I forgot.
That's a good day.
Yeah, it was a pretty good day. But yeah, I mean, you know, so it worked. Neil's happy, and we're still friends to this day, and everything yep. was cool. And he was just, he really is a hell of a guy. I mean, he really helped the people so much that he was working with and everything. But that's how, like, that's what kind of put me on the map, you know? So back then, internet marketing, quote unquote, wasn't a thing.
Is this like 99?
This is fast forward up now till 2006 or something.
Six, okay.
So there were maybe not two actually seminars, that long ago.
Yeah,
but it's, in our years, it's like a billion
yes.
years.
Yeah, yeah. So you've done this, and you said you've gotten some recognition. So I think you were going into what happened next.
I was like, look at me, I'm smart,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Because that's what you do.
Okay.
Yeah, and so then I had moved out here. So during all that time, I moved here to California. So we did that day, the opening day for Neil's stuff, in this little office above a real estate place on Prospect Street in La Jolla. I can't remember the address, but it's an A-frame attic.
Okay.
And it was an IKEA desk. So it's me, Trey, Thundercat, Neil, and our friend Jason Moffitt.
Thundercat.
And this like this tiny thing with a laptop on an IKEA desk hitting refresh a million times. Like,
you
I
know
can't
that
believe
helps sales. It's like a pump. The more you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that worked. And then I'm like, I'm super smart. Look at me. And my friend Mike Long calls me and goes, hey, there are these dudes, Andy Jenkins and Brad Fallon. I'm working with them, and they're going to launch this thing called StomperNet, and they want to do $10 million or something, and I want you to do the launch because you did Neil's thing. I didn't want to do it. I'd just come out here. I didn't know them. Uh-huh. You know, yeah, I'm weird, right? And so I didn't know these guys. I'm like, I don't know you people. I don't want to do anything. And you know, I made a little bit of money, and back then it was a lot to me, and I just started surfing. Right. So I'm like, tell them I'll do it for $25,000, thinking they'll
That's
say,
insane.
Screw you.
Right, yeah.
And they agreed. And so I'm like, now I have to do it, because they sent the money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you pay me the money, I'm going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I wrote the stuff for them, and that ended up working really, really well. And so I'm like, well, if I'm going to do it, I might as well, you know,
lean in and
really do it. So that's when I created Mass Control and literally set out. I remember I was on a plane. Mike and I were flying to Atlanta to meet with the StomperNet guys. This was after their launch, which was very, very successful. And they were like, you know, both of you knuckleheads should be consultants for us and help us run this business, which is like having Guns N' Roses. Well, Mike is a different story. Like, he's probably very good at this. But for me, it's like asking Axl Rose to run Geffen Records. You know, so they're like, oh, you're good at making the music. You should come run the record label.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I'm like, all right, yeah, let's go, bro.
Right.
So I'm on the plane, and I wrote out the plan to become a famous internet marketer. I'm like, screw it. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to try to sell as much of this how to do internet marketing stuff as possible. And from that moment, I hatched the scheme to create Mass Control, which was really, it was a product I created in whatever year that was, outlining how I did all that stuff.
Right.
Because it had become formulaic at that point.
You know?
And that's kind of how the whole dog and pony show started.
So did you, knowing that you generally don't want to be famous or don't want to be in contact with lots of strangers, is that probably the best way to describe
it? Both of those are accurate statements.
That's an odd choice, right? What made you want to do that? Or what gave you the strength to get past the fear that you had of being out there with all those strangers that you didn't know, being famous
the
and
money.
Being recognized?
Yes, it was 100% the money.
Okay.
If they're like, you can like have a lot of people know you and we will pay you a dollar, I would say, I don't think I would like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Where some people would like, I'll pay you $1 million if
just
a lot of
to make
people,
me famous. Yeah, exactly.
But I knew that because like video had started, you know, it wasn't as popular as we have now or as easy as we have now. It's like, all right, you know, I can really make something of this, all of this stuff.
And
so I said, screw it. I'm going for it. You know, I want the money and I want to take over this market. Not literally, you know,
but
I do a good job and blah, blah, blah. So I created the thing and it worked.
Now, obviously people can get Mass Control and find out what you were thinking at the time. If you were going to summarize between back then and now, you've gone through several evolutions in your business model and everything else. What would you say to the you back then now if you were saying, you know that plan you got? Here's what it ought to be.
Oh, it would be go for real business.
Go for real
sure.
Business. What does that mean?
When I started the Mass Control, like during the Mass Control years, which I also refer to internally as the years of psychosis, you know, because I'd come from like this little town in Georgia and like I was making seven figures, which from a dude from Georgia, that's $1 billion.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I was like, holy crap. I literally could not figure out what to do with the money.
Right.
It was like, I'll get a Ferrari and a Rolls and I don't know, let me lease a giant house.
It's
and
an interesting thing.
Get as many guitars as I can. Right. And what if I just sit around
the
beach for a
couple?
No, that's stupid. Yeah, I'm not going to invest it. That's for
old
idiots.
People stuff.
Yeah, I'm not old. So I, you know, it was like crazy. And during that time, I was deliberately attracting people like me at that time, which didn't want to do anything, wanted to party all the time. And I still want to party all the time, but I don't because it'll kill me. Mm-hmm. So if I could go back in time and be like, first of all, I guess I'll have to address myself and be like, yes, you really do look like this now. Mm-hmm. You know, it has really come to this.
Your younger
you have let yourself go, right? You might want to continue with the exercising. First of all, don't stop the exercising, right? That'd be the first thing I would say is keep up the physical activity. But go for real business, you know, because I made stuff, a lot of stuff for like beginning internet marketers. Like, and, you know, I mean, not to disrespect anybody, but the term internet marketer has a couple of meanings. Like one is an individual who uses the internet as a source of media to acquire a new customer.
Yep.
And then it also means someone who tries to get rich quick on the internet doing nothing.
Right.
I was appealing to the latter.
So your target has evolved. You would say move the needle on where your client is from the wannabe starting person to someone who's already got some level of success because you think you can help those people better and they've got more money to pay.
Without question.
Right?
Well, yeah, you can get them better results.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not like people listening to this probably, unless they're just insomniacs, you know, and are trying to go to sleep, they probably have like some knowledge of how to sell things online.
Yeah.
And so we, meaning you and I and everyone else who would be listening to this conversation, tend to formulate this belief that the entire world is familiar with this stuff.
Right.
They are not.
Yeah.
I was teaching a copy class yesterday, and it was a wrong statement. I said, you know, there's probably 1,000 people on the planet that can write copy. And I think that was wrong. There are probably, you know, at most 100,000 people on the planet who can actually write copy. Sure. And then what are there, 7 billion people?
Yeah.
And then so if you take that and then you say, you know, out of those people who can actually create an internet campaign that sells, what are you, 50,000 maybe? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that like the 50,000 of us who can are brilliant. It's just that no one has taught the other 7, you know, whatever billion people how to do it. So when I started, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that the person with, you know, the $10 million supplement company that's offline would love to be able to acquire customers from the internet, or the medical practice that has no customer acquisition system but still manages to do $5 million a year could double the practice by putting an advertorial in the newspaper.
It's really amazing to me. I've spoken at a couple of YPO things, the Young Presidents Organization, and the people who are in there have ridiculous businesses. Like I think you have to be doing $13 million in sales to just get in, and a bunch of other stuff too. But when you speak, even to the digital marketing groups, which Ryan Dice and Perry Belcher would say, it's digital marketing, not internet marketing, because internet marketing is make money online, but digital marketing is.
It's an important distinction.
It's an important distinction.
Yeah, it's a very important distinction.
But they don't, they're doing what they do. All those people are doing what they do, and they're really successful at it, and they're making $13 million or $100 million or $1 billion because they know all the things that they know. They know how to make candles. They know how to sell blankets. They know how to do whatever that thing is the way that they know how to do it. But the whole digital thing is still so new, even though for us and a lot of people that might be listening to this or watching on the live stream are that's not new. I've done know all that stuff. But knowing it and doing it are two completely different things. So even the people, when I'm there talking to them and they're like, yeah, I have heard stuff like this. Some of this stuff is new. I don't know what a pixel is, but can you do it? They always ask, can you do it? Because and I'm like, initially I would be, well, you can do it because look, this, and this. And I'm like, that's in the weeds. That's the weeds of the business.
I ain't got time for that.
I love that because For all the people who actually do that to help people, it's not something that they know about. It's not something they're going to do. And there's still this tremendous opportunity with millions and millions and millions of businesses that are doing over $1 million that have money to spend that just want somebody else to help them with it, which is what you really specialize in now,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, what's funny is like sometimes clients will be in the same business I'm in. They're like, well, don't you care that you're teaching me how to get customers? And I'm like, dude, if me and you and every single person that we know that does this crap.
Yep.
Never slept ever and like got injected with the mental DNA of David Ogilvy and Claude Hopkins and Albert Lasker and all these brilliant people and like marketed to the entire universe. We couldn't make a dent.
Yeah.
And the demand that there is out there for people to actually get more customers and more sales and everything in a business, you know.
It's
that's the one thing. If I could go back in time, I would be like, keep up the physical movement. You know, and then don't screw around with the internet marketing stuff. I mean, I like that market and everything. There's a lot of good people, but there's, you know, a lot easier. It's hard to take a boulder and move it if it's not moving at all, move it from here to there. But if already going a little bit slow, you just kind of push it and it goes faster. I'd rather take that second route, you know.
So you have evolved your business many times. Your business model many times since I've known you.
That's a great way of saying you're flaky.
What?
You know, it's like you're super flaky and have ADD, which is true. Yeah.
But it is characteristic of every successful person I know. To me, all of that makes perfect sense because you have been experimenting and exploring with all of the different business models to find the one that made you happiest. It's really funny. A lot of people, I think, get stuck doing the same thing, and then years and years go by and they're still doing that same thing because they didn't think to reach beyond. They didn't think, how can I modify this? How can I go to the next level? But you clearly are throughout your entire story that you just told. And in particular, in these last 5 or 6 years or so that we've known each other, how are you looking at what you're doing at any given time and saying, I'm making $6 million a year doing this thing, but I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do this because I think that takes a lot of balls, right? a lot of people would be like, well, I'm still going to do this.
I don't want to lose my $6 million.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they end up not being able to make 100. So that I'd like to just to get your thoughts on that.
It starts with personal preference, really. Mm-hmm. You know, so I work with a lot of clients like, what should I do? And my answer is whatever the hell you want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, because you will die. I mean, I have these results are typical. There is a 100% mortality rate among all of my clients.
Yes.
Yeah, which doesn't speak well. Yeah. You know, for what's going on, but they will all eventually die.
That until now, but that is true. Eventually,
I mean, they're going to die.
100% of your clients.
So it was like, whatever you want to do. So I started always with personal preference, you know? So like, if you don't like doing it, stop doing it. But then the way to kind of figure out what's going to have the biggest impact is really that best payday thing. So it's you take all your deliverables, you know, whether it's mastermind stuff or selling carburetor rebuilds or whatever, you know, and you run it through this filter of what's going to have the highest net profit and provide the most amount of personal energy and be long-term, have the greatest degree of long-term sustainability, meaning you could do it over and over again. And, there was one more, and I forgot. Let's just say there were those three. Okay. It's gone from 4 to 3.
And then the mystery one, which if they become a private client,
right.
They'll find out.
If you act now and be upgraded to the titanium version, you can have the diamond-encrusted answer. I can't remember what it was, you know, but basically you find the thing that makes you the most money that's not a big pain in the ass.
Right.
Easiest to sell, probably, okay. I think is what it is.
Okay.
And that's, like, the thing that you should do, you know, because most, like, our blessing as entrepreneurs, we're very, very creative people. We're always looking to do new stuff. We're always looking for new breakthroughs. We're always looking for new ways to contribute, to add value. And our brains are like, make stuff, make stuff, make stuff. Go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And that's great. And our worst curse is that we're very creative people. We're always looking for ways to create value. And our brains are going, make stuff, make stuff. So what happens is the typical entrepreneur, myself included, will be very successful in one area. And our brain's like, it's like an animal house with the angel and the devil, you know, on each, on one shoulder.
Well,
and it's the devil going, hey, man, you're a genius. You did that. You could do anything. Everybody else is stupid. You created a software company. You could totally dominate in apparel. Why don't you go out and make a bunch of shoes and outsource that to China? And you'll be great at it because you created the software company. And then, you know, we're like, yeah, we could totally crush that. And now we got these two businesses and they both suck.
Right.
Right. So the premise is stop doing that. Like, acknowledge it. Like, yeah, I can create that thing and all this stuff. But really focus on what's the highest net profit, greatest personal energy, greatest degree of sustainability, easiest to sell. If you just do that thing, that's your best payday. And then build systems around that. So I'm always looking to let that best payday evolve.
So in your, which I think is really genius, and I love the way that you've codified that you've got the four things now, or the three with the bonus.
Well, I mean, math is not an exact science. Everybody
not,
knows
math
this.
Is not an exact,
not even
just
close.
Like accounting.
No,
so
accounting is like paint by numbers without the numbers.
It is.
Yeah, it's like Pollock. Just throw stuff around.
So what was the analysis that you did, or what was the thought process that you went through from transitioning out of or making the decision to stop doing the monthly thing? Because you had focused 100% all in on the monthly thing, and it was doing great. And then you'd said, you know what? Actually, that's not something that I'm going to stick with right now. Or I don't, stick with's not right. That's not where I want to be in the future. So I'm going to take a pivot and go into private client all the way. Because I think a lot of people follow you and are like, well, the thing to do, if Frank's doing the
If he's doing it, it must be the worst thing
obviously,
to ever assume.
Let's do that, right?
It's probably, if he's doing it, let's wait a year. And if he's still alive and still doing it, then we should do it.
Fair enough.
You know? Yeah, no one should listen to me under any circumstances ever, which I've put on the back of DVDs that I've sold. Like, no one should ever listen to this ever, period.
Right, right.
With a skull and crossbones on it. Like, that's a pretty good disclaimer.
I haven't seen the skull and crossbones, but I do like it.
I'm literally on like Mass Control Monthly stuff. The DVDs had a skull and crossbones that said, this should not be watched or listened to by anybody under any circumstances for any reason.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty good disclaimer.
So how do you make that pivot?
That's like not quite what happened.
Okay. Tell me the way.
So I still do the monthly thing and love it. You know, I got tired of promoting it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, if I'm going to do a good job for these guys that I'm serving in my newsletter, you know, so the monthly thing is the current Inner Circle, mm-hmm. which we still have a lot of people in that. It does really, really well. I talk to them every other week. It's great. But I was hitting a wall and like, well, I'm doing the same thing over and over again. There's only so much I can teach them. Like, right. And here's how I'm doing this thing still.
Right.
Here's I'm doing the same thing I was doing the other day. You know, still doing it. Yay. So I decided that.
Although that in itself is a whole lesson, right?
It really is, but it's boring for them.
Yes. You know?
So I decided I wanted to work with entrepreneurs and individuals in a smaller group setting that were really doing a lot from a wide degree of, not a degree, but whatever, a wide selection.
Range of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, arrangement of different industries so I could make cool stuff happen, A, for them, primarily for them, because they're the client, you know, and do a good job for them. But then B, be able to say like, hey, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Here are the basic tenets and principles or whatever of how to get all of this stuff done.
Right.
And in doing that, began to really enjoy that type of work. Private client group is very, very hard. Like, so it's weird, you know, because I'm a guy that likes to sit around and not do anything and drink champagne all day and eat as much as possible and never exercise. And that's how I maintain my figure. And private client group goes against all of that.
Okay,
you know, it's like show up in an office that's very expensive and have people that have paid you a lot of money, like basically surround you and look at you and wait for you to tell them what to do immediately to solve all of their problems.
Right.
So it's a very intense situation for me. For them, it's a pretty good deal.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
they're just like, if this doesn't work, we can just beat him because we've outnumbered him.
Didn't realize that was an option. But
yeah. I mean, I put it in the fine print, you know, and so far no one's taken it. I kind of try to nudge them that way, but don't judge me. I'm into what I'm into.
I'm not gonna.
Yeah. My tastes are my tastes.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, so it's hard as hell, you know, but it's also really, really fun for me. And on an hourly basis, it would constitute best payday.
Right.
If someone were to say, you can never do anything again other than private client group, I could probably earn a net income of like $5 or $6 million a year doing 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. Now, that'd be hard. It doesn't sound hard, you know, like, oh, work 2 days a week, but you understand 2 days a week is a lot of clients, and they're like every single client is different, and I assume 100% responsibility
100% of the time,
for
right?
all of their life problems.
Right,
you know,
right.
You pay me that much money, I'm going to worry about you all the time,
right.
Which no one should ever do. Like if someone were my client having that job, I'd be like, no, don't worry about their problems all the time. Just do the thing they paid you for. But I'm incapable of doing that. You know, I keep them constantly in the forefront of my mind. Mm-hmm. So. That's why I did it, but it wasn't an abandonment of the monthly thing.
Okay,
it was,
and I didn't mean to say it was. It's just that your focus seems to be—is that fair to say that the real?
Well, the focus is on doing that work. A, because I like the work, but B, because I want to be able to bring new stuff to the monthly guys.
Right. Okay.
Other than here's another internet marketing trick that everyone else has talked to you about, but I'm just going to do it with a different slant.
Right.
With more profanity or different jokes or something.
Got it.
So nobody's out there going, "Hey, I got this dude. He does home services in New Zealand, and we created a print ad, and here's how the print ad worked, and here's how you could transfer that to this business, and here's the principles behind it."
Got it.
So it was, you know, number one, I mean, it's very lucrative, but number two, I like to keep that saw sharp.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a big deal to me to, like, actually be the best, not just to say, like, I'm the number one in the world, but to be the number one in the world.
Yeah.
And be able to say, like, oh, yeah. I made that work in that industry. I made that work in print. I made that work on radio. I made that work in digital. Sure, we do it in medical services. Sure, dental works. Sure, home services works. Sure, coaching works. Yeah, we did this in legal,
right.
Which not a lot of people can do.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So it's like, it is a best payday type of thing, but it's also this passion for really being very good at what you do. Because at the end of the day, I really like this stuff, yeah. You know?
You can't do it if you don't like it. You, I mean, nothing lasts. You sabotage it.
You'll kill it. It's like, oh, right.
Let's
see what happens if we throw things at them at the next meeting.
All right. Enough business stuff. A couple quick things. So wine, champagne, something that that we have had the chance to drink much of together and have some more, actually, that we probably should get into pretty quick.
We wouldn't want to be negligent.
What are some of your favorite alcoholic beverages these days? I won't limit it to wine and champagne.
Only to wine and champagne?
I will not limit it to
wine. Oh, you will not limit it to wine and champagne? Okay.
You go, girl.
Gosh, dude, I'm still going to have to go with like Krug Rosé as all time, even though this Jacques Cousteau is amazing. Is Solos is the guy's name?
Jacques Solos, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's going to be Krug Rosé against Jacques Solos. I might have a Krug Rosé here. I'm going to go and see if I can find it.
The Krug Rosé, it always traces back to you. I'm thinking about this, by the way. I'm like, you know, before I came out here to Rancho Santa Fe, I was in good shape. I was working out.
Surfing every day.
And then it is your fault because you turned us on to wine.
We did, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And prior to that, it was like I didn't drink wine. I just drank liquor and beer all day.
I accept full responsibility.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, you've made me a fat slob, but not quite fat enough. So I think it's a good idea to see if we can find that thing. Yeah, but I would have to say, dude, you know, for me, it's still the Ripple. It's going to be the Krug Rosé.
Okay.
I know it's cliche as hell.
Natalia says old fashions.
Oh, for cocktails, old fashioned.
Old fashioned's the best.
Old fashioned made by Leonardo at the Ritz Paris. He's
the magic. What's the liquor that goes into the old fashioned?
Four Roses.
Four Roses.
Four Roses.
Which we have here.
Yeah.
So he makes. That's why you were looking at it. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Four Roses bourbon, a little bit of carbonated water, sugar cube. And then they have their own mix of bitters. I use Angostura.
Is this the Hemingway bar?
No. I don't like it in the Hemingway bar as much. But I think that the upstairs bar is better for the old fashions.
Oh, okay.
At the Ritz. Yeah.
The one right when you go in to the left?
Yeah, to the left.
Interesting.
Yeah. Italian guy, Leonardo with the glasses, young guy.
Yeah.
He makes the best ones.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So for all the people who are interested in your four steps and best payday and private clients and all that, what is the best way for them to get a hold of you? And
I would consider them to at least should know better at this point than to bother with that. I think probably if you want to subject yourself to more of this, go to iTunes and search for my name and get on the podcast. My name is Frank Kern, K-E-R-N.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So how do you spell it again?
K-E-R-N.
It's so hard. It's not like it sounds.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I like that. Thank you so much for, I know this is not your favorite thing in the world to
do. I enjoyed it. It's just so funny holding the mics. I feel like we're on public radio.
Yes, yes. Well, and thank you so much.
Welcome to Knitting.
Everybody for joining us for Business Lunch. That is the end of the episode. We can now have the champagne tasting comparison.
That'll teach them.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. If you like the show, please remember to subscribe and share. And follow us on Biz Lunch Podcast on Twitter. Thanks for listening.
What if 3 days could change the course of your business in 2023? Get Scalable Live is where you'll gain great clarity on the next steps that will help you create the business, life, and wealth you deserve. Connect with business owners and entrepreneurs just like you. Hungry for advice, proven strategies, and necessary connections to grow a business.
Literally, million-dollar conversations are happening in the hallways, in the bathrooms, across tables.
Get Scalable Live at Fairmont Austin, November 2nd through 4th. Tickets are on sale now at GetScalableLive.com.